So this is the weather we've been longing for, right? You can't complain because it's 90 degrees in a Big Apple or somewhere on the East Coast. No, we deserve this weather. Come on. Remember those nor'easters? The first one, the second one, the third one, fourth one, fifth one? Yeah. It was a long winter. I tell you, even the miserable people in New York City are happy today. I don't think you can piss anyone off today. Well, until it gets really, really hot. But people are embracing this heat. The women are out there in their summer wear. Makes me think of some Bruce songs. And people are smiling, sunglasses on, no jackets on. Feels good. My name is Mark Farrell. The show is Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. How are you feeling? It's 1 minute after 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Hope wherever you are, it's a glorious day. Lots to cover today. We're going to meet Lou Schomer. He's the one of the partners of Abilities Expos. Abilities Expo is the leading producer of events for all disabilities, including seniors, veterans, and parents of children with disabilities. And I like to include friends, too, because we all know somebody with a disability. And we are friends with people with disabilities because we live in an inclusive world. And what can we do to help them out? Even pass on information about the Abilities Expo happening tomorrow, Friday through Sunday, in the New York metro area at the New Jersey Convention Expo Center. We'll talk about that. And with Lou, much more information. So, you know, it was really sad. Really, really sad. Avicii, the DJ, record producer, musician, who died on April 20th at the young age of 28. So, we all know the aspect of living in a limelight, what it can do to you, your mental health, feeling that you're invincible. Obviously, the life of drugs, alcohol, rock and roll, women, you name it. Wild, debaucherous lifestyle. So was that the case? It's been documented that Avicii, whose name, real name is Tim Bergling, a Swedish DJ. As a matter of fact, Forbes listed him last year as the top third highest earning DJ, coming in at $28.5 million. 28.5, that's quite respectable. But it just goes to show you, because on Monday, it was released that he took his life. He was an alcoholic, and he cut himself with a shard of glass that was found next to him. And it was very, very unfortunate because his brother and or his family members had spoken to Avicii earlier that week and realized that there was, like, I guess, a change in his demeanor. And so he flew out, his brother, and arrived just a few hours too late. I imagine that's something, obviously, his brother is going to have to live with for quite some time. But his family released a statement, said that Avicii was a seeker, a fragile, artistic soul searching for answers for existential and overachieving perfectionists. So when you have those incredible traits and characteristics and combine mental illness with them, it can be a, what kind of mix do we want to say? What kind of adjective? A challenging mix? Because people typically who are suffering from depression see a glass half full. We understand that, right? So when someone is a perfectionist, and a lot of times people with depression, OCD, these are high-functioning people, type A people, overachievers, etc. And Avicii was, I mean, he was traveling like crazy worldwide, endless hours, and it took a toll on his stress. As we all know, no matter what kind of profession you're in, or even if you're just leading a household full of three or four or five kids, but you're the head of that household and you're doing all the bills and you're running everybody around and you're the Uber of that family and you're cooking, cleaning, and doing whatever, you know, stress is stress. There's different forms of it. Certainly manageable stress, and certain amount of stress obviously is very healthy for us to survive. Certainly, if you go back to the Darwinian theories, that's what, you know, kept us alive and how we evolved. But certainly certain stress levels are good. But anyway, you know, it took its toll. And it's a real shame, because I'm going to keep imploring people until I'm no longer to articulate, speak, until I'm drooling, until I'm very, very old, that help is available. I mean, here's a poor guy, Avicii. He could have paid a professional health doctor, psychologist, social worker to travel with him. He could have been on medication. Maybe he was. We don't know that. It hasn't been disclosed. But due to his excessive drinking, it would have counteracted what he was taking in terms of SSRI medication, if that were the case. But life is too short. And so just get help. I mean, people are not going to think less of you. And if they do, the hell with them. They shouldn't be in your circle. That's when you find people's true colors. If they're there for you, hey, a fair weather friend is great on nice days, right? When things are good in lives, things are smooth sailing, etc. But when, you know, catastrophe, death, illness, financial turmoil, whatever hardship falls upon you, and it will, knock on wood, for you and me, those are the people who stand by you, right? In the good times and the bad times. For example, I had an aunt, unfortunately, who passed away a couple weeks ago. Yesterday, I'm driving down the road, driving down the turnpike after giving a talk, and I called my cousin, left her a voicemail, said, hey, listen, this is the hardest time. Funeral's over, and this is all in a voicemail. The funeral's over, you're back to your so-called normal life, but nothing's close to normal because obviously you're grieving. Yes, your mother was older, and she led a good life, but still, loss is loss. And people have to understand that. And so, you know, you try to do the right thing for the people that you care for and for people that you don't even know, but for that are related to a cause. But going back to Avicii, it's just a shame because, you know, how many times have we read about this and heard about this? History repeats itself. It's so cyclical from all, you know, great, incredible musicians that have overdosed purposefully, accidentally, and taken their life. Died by suicide. It's a shame. A lot of these people are extremely gifted. And you know what's interesting? I was thinking about this, an aside to Avicii, and then we're going to hear and see, if you're listening to us on, watching us on Facebook Live, Avicii's number one song, Wake Me Up, in a few moments. But I want to talk to you about, very quickly, about songs. Songs, I realized just the other day, driving down the road, you know, you can come to a lot of conclusions and come up with a lot of great ideas when you're driving. Typically alone, that's when I come up with my best ideas, or in the shower. But I realize music has really evolved. Yes, sonically, musicianship-wise, but in terms of artistry, lyrics specifically, because people are really putting their feelings out there much more than they were, say, 7-10 years ago. Artists are really bearing their souls and hearts. And that's cool. I think when you show your vulnerabilities, that's when people connect. When you expose yourself to people and prove and show that you're real, just like they are, the listeners of PRN, that's why I do what I do, because that's why I get up on stage, because I don't want to say, hey, I'm above X, Y, and Z. No, these are all the things I effed up on or didn't have control over or felt like I didn't have control over: mental health, drugs and alcohol, overcoming adversity, my visual impairment, on and on and on. So no, these are things that I chose to expose to the world on different platforms, on a progressive radio network, on another radio station, on my speaking tours. That's what I do, because I want people to benefit from things that either I erroneously did inappropriately, poor judgment, or number two, DNA, the strands that are running through my body that have caused, wreaked some havoc on my life. But the reality is, going back to the songs, it's great that musicians are able and feeling more comfortable. And maybe this comes from social media as well, because maybe they're becoming more comfortable by sharing their feelings in tweets and in all the different platforms, which could be a precursor to them writing lyrics. And if they're comfortable putting something out there in X amount of characters, maybe they're thinking like, wow, well, it's out there. So maybe this is a good song hook. And if Katy Perry did it, I'm just mentioning various artists, then and she was a success, then why can't I do it? And it's a good way to allow people to know that, wow, you can make and create great music and also share your feelings. Here's Avicii, Wake Me Up.
Feeling my way through the darkness, guided by a beating heart. I can't tell where the journey will end, but I know where to start. They tell me I'm too young to understand. They say I'm caught up in a dream. Well, life will pass me by if I don't open up my eyes. So that's fine by me. So wake me up when it's all over. When I'm wiser and I'm older. All this time I was finding myself and I didn't know I was lost. So wake me up when it's all over. When I'm wiser and I'm older. All this time I was finding myself and I.
It's kind of haunting when you hear the Wake Me Up When It's Over, because that kind of goes back to what I was saying in terms of putting your feelings online there, out there for people to absorb and to relate to. Because as his family put it, he was very, very sensitive, overachiever. And like my brother who took his life, died by suicide, was incredibly sensitive, very smart, very gifted. Just like a lot of people are. But, you know, mental illness doesn't discriminate. I say that to people. It doesn't matter whether you're white, black, short, tall, fat, old, young, whatever. I mean, just the other day, an 8-year-old in New Jersey, 8 years old, took her father's service revolver and shot herself in the chest. Now, it's not speculated as an accident whatsoever, because she has some history. 8 years old has history with depression. 8 years old. Jesus Christ. What else can you say? Whew. Anyway, so we're moving on to some good news. So I don't know the full backstory on this, but I'm going to roll with it anyway, because it was sort of a light internet sensation. Her name is Momo, I believe, and she went in for surgery for something I don't think too complicated a year or less than a year ago. And unfortunately, she experienced a condition. There was a mistake made, et cetera, et cetera. She was unable to walk. So she's going to her prom. I imagine her prom date expected to see her in a wheelchair or in a walker or crutches. I'm not sure. But when the prom date arrived, this handsome gentleman opened the door, and this is what he saw. And that's what love and miracles are made of. Events like that.
How did you do that? Y'all got me good.
So for those of you not watching on Facebook, we have this beautiful girl, high school girl, standing inside the door of her house. And the date, I guess, rang the bell, and her mother is there filming it, and the door opens, and he's probably looking in disbelief because, number one, he just sees a beautiful girl that he's probably very honored and happy to take to the prom, and, you know, he has to say, he's waiting to say, like, oh, you look beautiful, and he's stunned for a few moments because he's taken aback, and then he realizes, oh, my God, as you heard him uproar, and that's really, really sweet. So things like that just really are nice when you see them on the internet, because, you know, it's real. And for people who do something that would be artificial and less than credible, then, you know, shame on you. But things like that are real and just prove. There's actually a website inspiremore.com, inspiremore.com. And they have a lot of very positive, actually all positive stories. There's not one negative story on there. So it's a great way to subscribe and start your day, or if you're feeling kind of down, read about something great, because they have some grand information on there that just shows that whether it's helping other people or being positive, how things can change. And I always say to people when I talk and I'm doing a part about my visual impairment, and I ask people, do you believe in miracles? And some people raise their hands. I'm like, well, I do too now, because I wasn't able to drive between the age of 17 and 25 due to my visual impairment. One day I got a call from my doctor's office. He said, come on in, Mark. He said to me, Mark, what's the one thing you've been asking, rather begging me for the last 10 years or so? And I said, well, to drive a car. Duh. He goes, well, sit back. I think it may be possible. So they came out with these glasses like a surgeon wears with a telescope on the outside. And it's just amazing. Turned my life, you know, totally 180. It's a rite of passage to be 17 and get your driver's license. And it's a little different in New York City or in major metropolitan cities, but the choice is yours. And to be able to just go when you like and to be free, and there's nothing like that feeling. Like going to the prom, another rite of passage for Momo, who actually can walk on her own 2 feet. And that's a great thing. My name is Mark Farrell. The show is Insight. Thank you for joining me each and every Thursday, as you always do. I mentioned at the top of the show, we're going to have a very interesting guest, Lou Schomer, on from Abilities Expo. Abilities Expo, I learned about them, oh, geez, probably about 5-6 years ago when I went to the New York Metro Expo, which is happening starting tomorrow, May 4th through the 6th, right here at the New Jersey Convention and Expo Center. And I was just really amazed by, number one, the attendance of people with all different disabilities, ages, relationships, caregivers, young, old, brothers, sisters, family members. And every year I've been going back since. There is something for me being visually impaired. And I think the most important aspect for Abilities is to go and to talk to people, because, you know, we have all these life struggles. And whether somebody has a visual impairment or not, but there's something I always can learn from people who are in attendance. And without any further ado, Lou Schomer, welcome to the show. And I look forward to meeting you, and hopefully you're feeling a bit better today, because you got a long weekend ahead of you.
I do, Mark. And I got a good sleep last night, so I'm feeling a little bit better. And I'll get stronger for tomorrow, because Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, as you know, those are the days of the show when we really have to be on.
Absolutely. You and your business partner, David Course, purchased Abilities Expo from a couple, Rick and Pat Wooten, back in 1979. That's when he founded it, but you purchased it from him 10 years ago, and you've really elevated this entire model from 3 cities to 7 cities, including New York Metro, where we are now. And tell us why you thought this was a good model for you and David Course to undertake, and what was your grand macro scheme?
Well, I had been in advocacy for 35 years. I was the largest organizer of career fairs, diversity career fairs in the country. And I sat on the board of the NAACP for 20 years.
You were ahead of the curve, way ahead of the curve.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
And so advocacy, it has always been a passion of mine. And when we looked at the show, we were invited to look at the show down in Anaheim, which is only 60 miles south of Los Angeles. And I turned to David and I said, David, there's a half a dozen things that we can do here, but the big thing is this is advocacy, and I don't think the present owners understand advocacy. I don't think they understand the community. And the fact that they're trying to divest some of their assets is just an absolute opportunity for us. And so that's exactly what we did, because what we did was we looked at the 3 shows they had. One show, Minneapolis, was canceled immediately because it just wasn't performing. And then we built up another 5 shows to make it 7 shows. And the key ingredient is that, as you mentioned before, Disability has no age. Disability is colorblind. Disability runs the gamut from autism to CP to people with diabetes. So there's lots of people who have abilities and don't understand or don't know that there are several products and services out there for them to make their life more independent.
Absolutely.
And the key to our show is independence. And it's just like your eye doctor who gave you something that would enable you to drive, you didn't even know about until he called you. And those are the types of things that somebody will see when they come to Abilities Expo.
Fantastic. What did you see in terms of lectures, workshops, products back then and 10 years down the road? Obviously, technology has changed the playing field for the world, or I should say for persons with disabilities, tenfold. So that also has played into probably a great timing for Abilities Expo to really evolve.
It is. And you know, we go back to the beginning of ADA, which is now getting on to 40 years. But ADA was developed 40 years ago. And today there are so many more people with so many more devices. Technology has proven that ADA really is not current anymore. So, for instance, when you built a hotel, you had to have X number of accessible rooms to X number of able-bodied rooms. Well, that's quadrupled today. And especially during our show, where 30% or 35% of the people who come in with a disability. Then we have distributors who come in who are looking for new products, and of course, family members and health caregivers. So the technology has improved so much that ADA, even though it's a compliance issue and it protects those people with disabilities, it's nowhere near what it has to be today. A good example, application of power seating functions. There's a thing called complex rehab. Somebody just can't walk because they're aged or they're a paraplegic. They can use a manual chair. But if their disease is much more complex, such as CP or MD, they need many more accessories on their chair. And the biggest problem that we have is finding the reimbursement for those particular accessories. Most of the people who will be able to get a chair on disability will be able to get it funded by Medicare. But Medicare looks at a headrest as a luxury as opposed to a necessity. They look at articulation, being able to rise up or go down, as a luxury as opposed to a necessity. In fact, I was at a meeting of the National Rehab or the National Council on Rehab and Technology last week in Washington. And one of the women who had a complex chair said, "This morning I was able to put on my pantyhose all by myself, but I used six different functions of the chair."
Wow.
And she said, if I didn't have the chair, I would have to have a caretaker come in and help me. So that shows that the more independence that a person has, the less care they need from the outside.
Sure. And from the government standpoint, there's less money to be spent because obviously you're paying for a caregiver, and you can't even put a price tag on autonomy.
Oh, you're absolutely right. We have a couple of robotic products at the show, one which would feed somebody, another which gives them the ability to use either a left arm or a right arm if their arm is paralyzed. And these are the technologies that people see, and they just don't know they're available until they come to a show where we have so many products and services.
Lou Schomer, I want to go back a second or two to what you mentioned in terms about luxury items that are not mandatory. It seems to me that the government's very short-sighted because without these, maybe a headrest, for example, that someone is going to need a different or additional care because of something that is preventable or can aid somebody, but the government's short-sighted and or the research is outdated.
Absolutely. And that's exactly the point, because products and technology are making people so much more independent that if they're able to get funded, they don't need extra help.
When you walk in the door tomorrow, Friday the first day, and you see the thousands of people buzzing around, the hundreds of exhibitors, sponsors, you must, obviously, when you get a non-chaotic moment, say to yourself, wow, this is just amazing that you and your business partner, David Corus, were able to just take this, the three-show platform, and to evolve to a point where you can put on such a major exhibit in seven different major parts of the country and also leading into Canada and impact so many lives, and also charging absolutely nothing for entrance.
Correct. Well, I'll give you two stories. First of all, when somebody with a disability walks into our show
or rolls in,
they look around and they see more people like them than they do able-bodied people.
Yes.
There's nowhere else where they can walk into a situation and say, wow, they're like me.
I'm at home.
This is where I should be. The second thing about the wow moments, in our first show in Anaheim, we were getting close to closing in, it was about 4:30, and we close at 5. And a young single woman comes in with a 6-year-old son with CP in a chair, and the son had never been able to walk before. And so he passes by a booth, and the booth pride says, has your son ever been able to walk? And she said, no, he doesn't have enough strength in his lower body. He says, well, we have a chair that might be able to assist him. Would you like to try it? And, of course, he gets in the chair. And as soon as his feet touched the ground, he started moving. And he was held upright by the chair, but he was moving. And he got so excited, he started running. The mother starts crying because she's so happy. And this is something I've never seen in my life. The exhibitor that was next to him gave a credit card to the provider and said, look, I don't know what this chair costs, but the kid goes home with the chair.
Wow.
That's
Whoa. A
wow moment.
That is beyond a wow moment. Incredible. How many years ago was this?
That was our first year.
First year. And is he still doing quite well with this chair or a version of it?
Oh, now he comes to the show and he's walking with canes.
Fantastic. Is he one of your ambassadors?
He's our poster boy.
Great. Wow.
And we saw an old woman who was very depressed, must have been in her late 70s. She had a caregiver. And in Houston, she passed by some miniature horses, because miniature horses are used to service animals also. And she turns to her caregiver, smiles, and says, look at the lovely horses. And the caregiver hadn't heard her speak for 3 years.
Wow. Never know what it takes.
So these are really our wow moments. We have a wow moment at every show. And David and I look at each other and say, this is what we should be doing for life.
Yeah, certainly. Talk about some of the workshops, Lou Schammer.
Workshops are great. We cover everything from how to select a chair to service dogs. When is it time for me to get a service dog? How am I going to go about it? We talk about cannabis. Cannabis is a huge thing today because everybody's talking about opiates, and cannabis, CBD, is a natural, builds up the immune system, and it's a natural non-inflammatory. So we have many people who come in to find out exactly what cannabis can do for them. We have accessible accessible travel. So people who...
Lou, I'm sorry to interrupt you here. Number one, PRN listeners probably didn't think we're going to be talking about cannabis today when we're talking about an Abilities Expo, number one. And number two, we can't gloss over the actual positive effects for people with autism, people for spinal cord injuries, because it can really impact their lives a great deal.
Oh, there's absolutely no question about it. In fact, Sanjay Gupta did a whole thing on CNN on Sunday night about the difference between cannabis and opiates. So it's a very, very important part of somebody's routine, especially people who are paraplegics, who their legs will start spasming involuntarily, and the CBD slows that down. So that's some of the workshops. Some of the other workshops we've got are things like accessible home design. What do you really need if you've got a disability, whether you have a sighting problem, whether you can't hear? There are all sorts of different things that are going to be able to be in your house that make you more independent, and it's easy to use. And on Saturday, we have Micah Fowler. Micah Fowler? Micah Fowler is one of the stars of Speechless, and he's got CP. And it's on Channel 7, well, in LA it's Channel 7, sure. ABC. The other star is Minnie Driver, the English lady.
Sure.
And he's wonderful, and he's going to come tomorrow. He's going to sign autographs. Oh, sorry, he's coming Saturday. He'll sign autographs. And he's just a lovely, lovely kid.
How old is he?
He's probably in his early 20s.
Okay, thought so. Fantastic. And we should also point out that there are many avenues and services provided. We're talking about maybe basic needs. Basic needs are huge. We can't undersell or estimate how important it is for someone just to be able to dress themselves, bathe, eat, maybe get around their neighborhood, get to a car, drive a car, assisted car. But for those who are even a little bit more advanced, there's workshops for athletes, adaptive skills, adaptive workshops, sports that are geared for and towards persons with disabilities.
And one of the really special sports we have is a mountain climbing. We'll put people in a harness, but they have to pull themselves up.
Great.
And obviously it's very safe. But when they get to the top and they ring the bell, the smile on their face cannot be matched. It's the best thing that they've done in years. And lots of people, even if you're a quadriplegic, they allow you to they'll help you to get to the bell, and they'll ring the bell with their mouth pull the cord. That is the most dynamic thing that you'll see.
And what a great metaphor, Lou Schomer, that you're actually pulling yourself up.
Correct.
I mean, in life, you're pulling yourself up and doing what you want to do. Maybe you don't want to be a mountain climber, but the fact is you're in an area, a safe zone where you're able to do this, obviously a cantilever, a seesaw effect, et cetera, that allows you to do something that, you know, you never even thought of. But the fact that is you'll leave that day, or someone will leave that day thinking, wow, I just did that. Now I can accomplish what I want to do in life.
You're absolutely right. And then we have wheelchair dancing, which is absolutely fabulous.
Oh, that's great. Is that Kitty Lund?
No, it's Audie Angel it's the Rolettes.
Great.
These two different groups. And every one of the groups, after they do their routine, they invite the audience to come in. They teach them just basic, simple routines. They play music, and people have the most fun they could have. They never thought that they could ever dance. not blown.
Sure.
Even climb a mountain. So there's so many things there. And one of the things that we introduced last year, which we found very, very important, was an emergency preparedness response system. Because a lot of people, for instance, at the shooting in Las Vegas, if you were in a wheelchair, you couldn't duck any place, and you had to get out of there. So we talk about how you're going to be able to prepare yourself in case of any emergencies.
Give us some more insight into that, please, Lou.
Well, what we do is we talk about where you're going to be. So the first thing that's important is, where are you going to sit when you're trying to see something? And the most important thing is at an exit. So you want to be sure that you're going to be able to get out. You want to make sure that if you have to tip over, you tip over and cover yourself directly. So we're going to have questions and answers from New York Metro who are going to talk about what they would do, and especially for those people who have disabilities.
And 10 years ago, you certainly didn't think this was going to be on the lineup, correct?
Absolutely.
Wow, the world has changed.
Now it's one of our most well-attended events.
Really?
We also have yoga for people with disabilities, which is great.
Oh, my God, yes.
Because a lot of people with disabilities don't think that they can exercise. Mm. We also have an obstacle course for manual wheelchairs, so that if somebody is new to a wheelchair, we take them through getting on a curb, off a curb, down a slope, up a slope, and it's an obstacle course. And literally in 10 minutes, they get through it, and they're able to say, well, I never thought I could do that.
Yeah, outstanding. As a matter of fact, one of those companies I believe I met there 2 years ago, Happy Fest, and that's an obstacle
yep.
course for people with all disabilities, or abilities, I should say. Phenomenal people, Michelle and Adam Penn. It's happening this year, I think, in October in New Jersey, in Homedale, I believe. But it's just amazing how the connections that are made there, the ideas that are spawned. I remember meeting someone, actually she was on a show here via phone. She's out in your neck of the woods. I don't recall her name, but she produces jeans for persons with disabilities so they can easily
sure,
get
yeah,
into them.
Yeah.
And she was at your expo. So it's just limitless in terms of, because number one, I say when I speak to schools, colleges, and organizations, we all have a disability, whether it's real or perceived, and we're going to get more disabled as we age. Of course, the baby boomers, your expo is going to be probably evolving even more into that sector in terms of the senior population, because that's the reality we live in.
Well, it's interesting because there's been several different companies that have tried to put together an aging show. And in the United States, people who get past 65 or 70 years old, even though they may have a disability, they don't consider it a disability. What they do is they consider it something to do with aging.
Mm.
And as a matter of fact, a partner and I are going to be producing an aging and wellness senior show in India this year.
India, the country.
Yep.
Fantastic.
Yep.
Wow, what a great way to, because I mean, they have a whole different perspective of age, senior citizens.
And culture.
Oh, absolutely. Huge. And that's a great thing to bring back, obviously, coupled with yoga as well.
Yep. Yeah. And one of the other things that we have, which we've had before, and this is just fabulous for kids or adults, we have martial arts therapy. And Rabbi Gary Moskowitz puts it together, and they teach kids basic moves if somebody gets near them. And that gives them so much more self-confidence.
Mm.
So then they're not just sitting out there in the middle of nowhere, just ripe for somebody to take advantage of them.
Absolutely. My guest is Lou Schomer. Lou Schomer is half of the Abilities Expo team, along with David Corse. He's joining me from New Jersey by the New Jersey Convention and Expo Center, which is happening tomorrow, May 4th through the 6th. It's the New York Metro Abilities Expo. The other expos are in Atlanta, Chicago, Houston, Boston, San Mateo, Toronto, and of course, right here in New York's backyard. For more information, log on to abilitiesexpo.com. Is that com or org?
It's abilitiesexpo.com.
Abilitiesexpo.com. And Lou, tell us.
Or you could get through the site by just abilities.com.
And Lou, this is free. Is it paramount to sign up in advance?
The reason we like people to sign up in advance is because it makes registration so much easier.
Streamlines.
So if you sign up in advance, all we do is take your name to check that you're there, give you a wristband, and you go in, rather than having to fill out a registration on site.
I read somewhere, Lou, that it's very interesting how you have some incredible sponsors, but they're also more of your colleagues, in a sense, because they distribute information because they're various organizations serving different populations of the disability community that hand out, disseminate information about what they can learn from and what they can achieve by attending an Abilities Expo. And I think that's great.
Yeah. And also those organizational sponsors are able to sign people up and tell them all of the services that they can give them. Because, again, they may not know that those exist.
Mm-hmm. It's a broad network. Because obviously the internet's great, but especially when you have a relationship such as this, a sponsor exchange, et cetera, that this is communicated. Because, you know, it's paramount. Because so many people, just as myself, as you pointed out, that I didn't know there are these telescopic devices that would permit me to drive. And, you know, how many other things out there? You know, we read about this all the time where a mother's doing research for their child who's been told, no, 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 their child won't walk or see or hear again. But yet they find a doctor in Oshkosh who says, oh, yeah, sure, we can do that.
Yeah, that's very true. Absolutely true. One thing I'd also like to mention, Mark, is that admission is free. Parking is free. So there's no reason for you to not come down and see this.
And accessible, quite accessible.
Yes.
And that was one of the two things that was paramount to you in deciding venues, because number one, you want accessibility. That's a no-brainer. But number two, you want to make it so not only is it free, but, it, you know, cost is, you know, for persons with disabilities, there's 54 million people in America with disabilities, but they're not all affluent or middle class. So a 10 or 15 or $20 parking fee can prevent somebody from attending one of these expos, but not in this case.
Right. And for instance, we looked at Javits because obviously there's such a big parking population. Javits is totally inaccessible. They've got so many stairs there that somebody in a wheelchair could never get around. And plus the fact that there's absolutely no parking in Javits unless you go to one of the lots, which is two or three blocks away.
Oh, there's plenty of parking in Javits. You just, you'll get hooked. You just won't be there when you come out. That's all. Lou Schomer.
Either with your car.
Yeah, yeah. Uber, yellow cab, limousine, whatever it takes. Abilities Expo, check it out in New York metro area, happening tomorrow, May 4th through the 6th at the New Jersey Convention Expo Center. All the best to your business partner, David Corus, and I look forward to meeting you in the near future, Lou.
Thanks so much, Mark. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for your time.
Bye-bye now.
So I'd like to tell you about something I read about yesterday. It's called Citizen Virtual Patrol. So check this out. I have a hard time kind of swallowing this one. So, you know, in most states, there are cameras mounted at certain intersections, certain buildings, for whatever reasons. Maybe there's a high crime area, high traffic violations, people getting hit and runs, whatever the case may be. And these are monitored by who? The police force, of course. So now something has been brought up. Certainly in New Jersey, and I don't know how many other states, they want to have a citizen virtual patrol. So these same cameras that are being viewed by police stations will be available, will be available online for any Jill, Jack, and Mary, John, Bobby, and Sue to watch. Yes. So, at first thought, you think like, oh, all right, well, cool. It's kind of like we're all banding together to take a bite at a crime. But I don't know about that because, number one, I thought about, well, aren't the police supposed to be policing these cameras? And number two, doesn't that really kind of give up where all these cameras are located? Yeah, sure, some of them are, you know, obvious and can be easily seen. But I'm sure that are cameras that are clandestine, right? Not all of them can be abundantly apparent to the eye because, you know, sometimes that defeats the purpose. I remember when I was living in Hoboken, right across the river here in New York City, I became part of a civilian safety board because I was attacked by 10, 15 kids. Oh, it doesn't matter. I survived, right? So I figured, hey, if I don't want this to happen to somebody else, let me become involved in the community. So I became a part of this civilian safety board, and the chief of police was saying, oh, well, we have a camera on top of building X that shows the entire pier. I think it's called Pier A. I used to call it Grass Beach because people used to lay out there all the time. And I was like, wow, really? And he's like, yeah, you want to come see it? I'm like, yeah. So they were able to zoom in. You couldn't read what somebody was reading, but you could tell it was a magazine or a book. So obviously the technology is there. But going back to my point, is this an invasion of privacy? But then maybe it's not, because if you're walking down a public street, well, you're on a public street. So, but the other thing is that, are we giving people with not so pure thoughts and morals and tactics a way to say, oh, well, here's this guy who walks out of a building every day. He's a senior. And I bet you he's got cash, or he's coming out of the bank. And so could it be like a way for people to plan a mugging, attacking somebody, carjacking them, whatever the case may be? So there's so many different, you know, conduits to this, I should say. It just seems to me like, is it convenient for the police? Yes. When they get tips on the phone line, yes, it's always convenient. But to me, it seems like not Big Brotherish, but I think we're handing the baton over to the public in an extremely trusting manner. And I don't think that's the case. Maybe if they set up a, I don't know, a trial period, a beta test, where you have, say, 500 people in New York City on this pilot test, okay? But they have to take a, they have to have pass a background check and possibly be educated. So they have to go 2 weeks for training. So they have a background test they have to pass, 2 weeks worth of training. And now if you really want to be a citizen virtual patrol person, that's what you have to do. And then obviously they, the police department, could have access to your history, your log. So there would be a way to, for them to follow what they were viewing, what cameras, how long, how often, etc. So maybe that would be some way to kind of control what they're reviewing and who's viewing it. I don't know. What do you think? 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. I just think it's their heart is in the right spot, but I just think it executed, you know, I just think, you know, people's rights are at stake. People's safety is at stake. And I just think that this needs to go back to the drawing board before a pilot program of this nature or any nature can be unveiled, because I just think it's a little bit too dicey. What do you think? I don't know. That's my take on it. So I want to delve into something here. By the way, the show is Insight. Do you like it? Good, 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 good. Make sure you tell people about it. Make sure you tell people about the Progressive Radio Network. And all my shows are under Insight on PRN.FM. And we're also on Facebook and everywhere else. I'll put links up on my page. So, yeah, by the way, my name is Mark Farrell. If you like it, my name's Mark Farrell. If you don't like the show, my name is Raul. So I want to talk politics for a second. I wish we could hit, first of all, I am not that well-versed in vast politics. Sure, I follow it more than macro, in a macro sense. But in terms of the nuts and bolts, I'm just getting really turned off. So I'm going to address this in a macro sense, that I wish we could hit the reset button, because to me, It seems that it's all about being judged and serving to your base. And that, to me, is a shortcoming, even if you do that exceptionally well. Whatever president is in power, if they do that exceptionally well, serve to their base. What about the other party? What about the other party? Multiple parties. They are not being probably served to the best of your ability because you're just serving to your affiliated party. So, you think about it, a government of the people, by the people, for the people, I think I got that right, should be about that. Where are people's, loyalties, ethics, morals, dignity, honor? It's just, God bless you, program director. Oh, sorry, it's Alex. Alex, God bless you. So much for soundproof glass. That's more of the motion. Oh, somebody from Indiana just said, God bless you. I just got a text here. God bless you. Isn't that fast? Wow. Anyway, it just kind of just boggles my mind, especially when you watch all these different shows and you know they're true, about how to best spin something. How will it best look if we say it this way versus that way? How will it best to release a press release regarding something that is nefarious spun? What day, what time should it be released? What networks? And lobbyists, I don't think anything's going to change unless we really pull the reins back on lobbyists spending. Why do we need lobbyists and to a certain degree? Can we cap them? Can we limit them? Donors are synonymous, I think, with lobbyists because they're obviously contributing. They're not just giving money and time and resources away for the good of America. They want something back. And then one more thing I want to talk about regarding politics. And then the media. We need to develop, just like a lot of European countries, if this was a true level playing field, I'm going to make up a number here, each candidate gets $10 million, $20 million to spend max, okay? Because it's not about saturation. It's not about being overexposed. It's about being a viable candidate for the United States of America. If you don't have the money and you have the insight and the divisiveness, or not divisiveness, the plan to govern better, I think that'll come. And especially in a world of social media, I don't think money, if we do change the playing field, would be that divisive. So if we had a cap of whatever that dollar figure would be, say $50 million, okay? So you have three candidates, independent, Republican, Democrat, maybe a fourth. Then we have something that we can kind of control. And only, and this is another part that's very important, maybe a 5 or 6 month period where they can officially run and politic. Is that the right word, politic? Yeah, they're out politicking. Weird. Yeah, but it's right. right? What, doesn't that make sense? Because first of all, I mean, they started like 15 months out the last race, 16 months. I mean, we were just, we voted for Trump, not me. America voted for Trump because they are sick and tired of all the talking heads promising X, Y, and Z. Trump won because he's a talking head, but he addressed these people who are always shunned by former presidents. Whether they were a better performing president than the next or not, they, the middle class, are overlooked, continuously overlooked. And that's what Trump does best, makes these people feel that they're very, very important and then that he will not forget them. He will take care of them. So if we address all this, a time limit in terms of the campaigning, a cap on spending, media time, etc., put a limit on lobbyists, donors, etc., make it very nice and tidy. Now, if this wasn't done in other countries, you could say, yeah, Mark, you're Pollyanna-ish. And I'd say, yeah, you're probably right. But no, this is done to a certain extent in other countries, and it's effective. It is effective because parts of our system, I think, are broke. And I think Americans are just sick and tired and fed up with it, really. We need a change, and the change came in the form of Donald Trump, and it's not the right answer. So how did I get on that tangent? We went from disability expos to politics, from Avicii to Momo. We covered it all. So if you'd like me to speak to your at your school, college, or corporation on a range of topics that I cover that are all from personal experience, it's markfarrellmotivation.com, markfarrellmotivation.com. I speak about overcoming adversity, about being raised and born with wild animals and bears. No. It's also about how I had to do things differently in life, in school, how everything I did was unconventional, I should say. And it's a great, great lesson and experience. It's entertaining. It's funny. I make fun of myself, self-deprecating humor, and great, incredible stories. I say that because they are. That's what people tell me. About all the things I couldn't do and the things I had to do differently. And still yet to today, how I do things differently. So we speak about drugs and alcohol. Yes, been there, done that, from being raided in college, from undercover state troopers to almost losing my friend by having a pile of cocaine in front of us on a two-day bender, ODing, to being pulled over, inebriated, without a driver's license, and yes, being visually impaired. Mental health, yes, been there. Anxiety, depression, panic attacks. Yes, lots of experience. Speak. As a matter of fact, I have a great talk for another mental health organization next week to about 1,000 kids. Celebrating differences. My wife is Indian. I have an interracial marriage. I love it. Wouldn't have it any other way. I embrace individuality. Embrace your difference. All these talks have valuable lessons, nuggets of things that you can put into your life, incorporate, and be happier at work and at home and everywhere you go. So let's roll that closing music because I got nothing else to say. Special thanks to Jesse and to Alex for always holding it down here at Progressive Radio Network. Guess what? You know who's next? Gary Noe. I don't know what the hell he's going to talk about, but it's always good. My name's Mark Farrell. Always check me out at markfarrellmotivation.com, markfarrellmotivation.com. Have a grand day. Hopefully it's absolutely stunningly beautiful wherever you are because it is here in the Big Apple. Bye-bye. Have a great day.